From the Selected Addresses of Clarence Deaves, CSB, The Scientific Statement of Being, an Association Address of 1952. When Mary Baker Eddy was healed through reading the Bible story of the palsied man, she knew she had touched the current of spiritual healing so evident in the life of Jesus. Now let us read an account of this healing. And they came unto him, bringing one sick of the palsy, which was born of four. When they could not come nigh unto him for the press, they uncovered the roof where he was, and when they had broken it up, they let down the bed wherein the sick of the palsy lay. When Jesus saw their faith, he said unto the sick of the palsy, Son, thy sins be forgiven thee. But there were certain of the scribes sitting there, and reasoning in their hearts, Why doth this man speak blasphemies? Who can forgive sin but God only? And immediately when Jesus perceived in his spirit that they so reasoned within themselves, he said unto them, Why reason ye these things in your hearts? Whether is it easier to say to the sick of the palsy, Thy sins be forgiven thee, or to say, Arise, and take up thy bed and walk? But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins, he saith to the sick of the palsy, I say unto thee, Arise, and take up thy bed, and go thy way into thine house. And immediately he arose, took up his bed, and went forth before them all,
insomuch
as they were all amazed, and glorified God, saying, We never saw it in this fashion. Was it simply the reading of this healing that healed her? It had been read many times before, but without any healing effect. Was it the words which healed her? Was it what Jesus said? Or was it that she discerned that there was principle behind the healing, that it was not Jesus who healed the man, that it was not the words he spoke which had any healing in or of themselves, but it was the Christ understanding present as the identity of the Master which had healed? In The Life of Mary Baker Eddy by Sybil Wilbur, on page 130 we read, It was to me a revelation of truth,
she has written,
the lost chord of truth, healing as of old. I caught this consciously from the divine harmony. The miracles recorded in the Bible, which had before seemed to me supernatural, grew divinely natural and apprehensible. Accordingly, I discerned the principle of his holy heroism and Christian example. A spiritual experience so deep was granted her that she realized eternity in a moment, infinitude in limitation, life in the presence of death. She could not utter words of prayer, her spirit realized. She knew God face to face. She touched and handled things unseen. In that moment, all pain evanesced into bliss. All discord in her physical body melted into harmony. All sorrow was translated into rapture. She recognized this state as her rightful condition as a child of God. Love invaded her. Life lifted her. Truth irradiated her. God said to her, Daughter, arise. Many years later, the discoverer of the science saw the law behind the healings of Jesus. In the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, she could write, The starting point of divine science is that God, Spirit, is all in all, and that there is no other might nor mind. That God is love, and therefore he is divine principle. The formation of this principle was beginning to take shape, but it was to come forward clearly and distinctly only when this woman, working in the realm of divine metaphysics, discarded the human mind as a factor in the healing work. This intrepid discoverer had outlived Quimby and his personal magnetism, and had seen that it was the personality of this man, rather than divine law, which seemed to heal the sick. This wise leader saw that this revelation could not stand on personalities, for it would then be lost to the ages. Witchcraft had but recently been wiped out in New England. Here was a woman daring to rise above the religious atmosphere of her surroundings and investigate spiritual law and spiritual healing. As the investigation went on, she learned valuable lessons from her efforts to explain the principal aspects of this spiritual law to the human mind. As each one appeared, the clear-sighted discoverer saw the incorrectness of the position, corrected her course, and sailed further away from matter and the human mind. Mrs. Glover, as she was then known, had tried for months to persuade those who were more akin to her in social and intellectual heritage to accept the truth she had to impart. Some loved her, but were impervious to her doctrine. A Unitarian clergyman of Lynn and his wife were friendly, but they feared for their faith when she spoke to them of God as principle. But a Mr. Hiram Crafts appeared on the scene, and she guided him and taught him daily. Soon he was able to demonstrate and set up an office for practice. But Mrs. Crafts was filled with dissatisfaction and suspicion by her doubting relatives. Soon Hiram Crafts withdrew. But fortunately, before this took place, a certain work had been accomplished which could not be undone. One experience taught her that not only could she herself heal, but she could impart the understanding of the modus operandi to another. She could detach the work from herself and separate it from her personality. What remained was to give the discovery its scientific statement. Another experience showed her the obstructionism of superstition. Still another experience with a student uncovered personal mesmerism and spiritualism. There appeared a Mr. Tuttle. He was the exemplification of superstition and could only accept what Mrs. Glover was teaching if it had the coloring of his ignorance of divine light. He fell away because the light became too bright. Then came a Mr. Stanley. He was the dogmatic Baptist and argued for what he believed to be correct theological teaching. Mrs. Glover endeavored to lift him above his misconception of God, but it was no use because he only wanted to verify a position which he had taken, and our leader saw this would only delay the full revelation. She was groping in the dark herself. Her constant prayer was for light. Let there be light. She was on the way of spiritual healing, and nothing could thwart this woman. Let them laugh. Let them scoff. Let them put her out of their homes. She knew she could not turn back, because this was the quest for truth, and truth would sustain her until she could see the fullness of its appearing. Next came a Mr. Wright, a student of psychology mixed with personal mesmerism. At first, he had fine success in practicing what he thought was the truth as given by Mrs. Glover. Then even he began to question himself. Was it understanding or was it mesmerism which was healing? He even questioned to see if spiritualism or mediumship was entering in. But his intellectual self-sufficiency claimed him, and he separated himself from the fountain of pure water. Here Mrs. Glover, the searcher, was able to see that mesmerism and spiritualism were not factors in this work. It had begun to dawn that there is but one divine mind, because there is one God, and this God is principle. And there is no personal mind to mesmerize or to be mesmerized. As yet, Mrs. Glover had not named this discovery Christian Science, the science of mind itself. she was still groping in the dark, discarding that which was no longer needed, and holding on to that which was seen to be of God. A little later in the discovery, Mrs. Glover could write, telling of the falsities of spiritualism and denouncing it. For in the first edition we find the chapter Imposition and Demonstration, and in later editions it is entitled Christian Science versus Spiritualism. Mrs. Glover definitely and clearly saw, as each of us must see in our revelation of the scientific statement of being, that there is no mediumship between God and man. It was beginning to appear to her more brilliantly that the human mind was not a factor in the healing work. Actually, it was the absence of the human concept which permitted the Christ to appear in the same brightness as it appeared hundreds of years before and was called Christ Jesus. Later we find in the textbook, "Let us rid ourselves of the belief that man is separated from God, and obey only the divine principle, life and love." Here is the great point of departure for all true spiritual growth. But what is the great point of departure for all spiritual growth? To rid ourselves of any belief in separation, of two-ness. Do you see? These were not persons appearing, but states of consciousness which had to appear to Mrs. Glover in order that she might see the errors of the human mind, which would attempt to defeat this revelation and divert her from the straight and narrow path. Now appears a Mr. Kennedy, who seemed to be a scientific worker. Mrs. Glover worked long and faithfully with him, and he seemed able to demonstrate the teaching. Mrs. Glover felt he knew and saw something of what she saw. But it was from this experience that the discoverer of Christian Science found the great gulf existing between the science of mind and mental science, so-called. When Mrs. Glover endeavored to show Mr. Kennedy the gulf between Christian Science and so-called mental science, he turned from her, and it was then she saw he had been using mental suggestion, a form of personal magnetism, which up to that moment had fooled her. She saw she must separate Christian Science from the magnetic healer. In 1872, Mrs. Glover made a clean break with mesmerism, magnetism, manipulation, spiritualism, and any attempt to use mental science, so-called, to change one form of matter into another form of matter. It was 9 years after her discovery before the first edition appeared. From 1866 to 1875, Mrs. Glover was separating the tares from the wheat, always praying to find the way of the Master. In the Wilbur book we read, it was at Red Rock one evening when she felt her ego slip away from her, and divine science lifted her to the consciousness of spiritual being above the waves of time. Here she experienced eternity in a moment, for in her willingness to let this personal sense of ego slip away, the ego that is divine made itself evident. We call this revelation. Revelation is never personal. It is the willingness to let the old go for the new, which renders thought receptive to the advanced idea. Our leader was humble enough to let the personal sense of ego go, and find the divine ego to be the one universal ego forever identifying itself as the all. She wrote in Retrospection and Introspection, "Limitations are put off in proportion as the fleshly nature disappears and man is found in the reflection of spirit. This great fact leads into profound depths. The material, human concept grew beautifully less as I floated into more spiritual latitudes and pure realms of thought. From that hour, personal corporeality became less to me than it is to people who fail to appreciate individual character. I endeavored to lift thought above physical personality or selfhood in matter, to man's spiritual individuality in God, in the true mind, where sensible evil is lost in supersensible good. This is the only way whereby the false personality is laid off. Do you see, students, that every honest seeker for truth must free himself of all these phases of the human mind? Free himself from the satanic suggestion of being a person with a private mind, knowing something of the divine mind, and attempting through human will to demonstrate this science, or to project it on something and change it? Our leader had found the way, the Christ way. She permitted the ego to go to the Father and stay with and as the Father. In Message of 1902, we find, "For the ego, or I, goest to the Father, whereby man is godlike." And again in miscellaneous writings, "The I does go unto the Father. The ego does arise to spiritual recognition of being, and is exalted, God understood." The human mind, with its superstition, egotism, intellectuality, spiritualism, and mental gymnastics, was seen not to be the factor. The gulf was being fixed. It was becoming more evident that this is mind science, or the science of the Christ. In these first years, she must teach whosoever would come. The humble and the meek would come, even as the fishermen in Jesus' time came to hear the Nazarene. In the Wilbur book we read, "It is not possible to draw a picture of those first classes in mind science that will appeal to a sense of the beautiful. The students who were drawn together were workers. Their hands were stained with the leather and tools of the day's occupation. Their narrow lives had been cramped, mentally and physically. Their thoughts were often no more elevated than their bodies were beautiful. At night, then, these first classes met, and it was in the heat of July and August. In the barely furnished upper chamber, a lamp was burning, which added somewhat to the heat. Insects buzzed at the windows, yet that quiet was permeated by the voice of a teacher at whose words the hearts of those workmen burned within them. The light, which was never on land or sea, was made to shine there, in that humble upper chamber. The response was a spiritual thrill which vibrated through consciousness to the circumferences of the world's horizon. And that moment of exquisite tenderness evoked in the humble upper chamber seems destined to swell into an aeon where time melts into eternity, for it was in such a moment that the understanding of divine consciousness was imparted. The shoe worker from his dingy bench, his foul-smelling glues and leathers, the whir and clamor of machinery, saw the walls of his limitation melt and experienced the inrush of being where the lilies of annunciation spring. It is necessary at this point to see that the ideas which constitute Christian science have been forever in the mind that is divine. Only mind can evolve or create ideas, and the mind which conceives the idea maintains the idea. Mrs. Glover did not originate the ideas which were being taught. Mind is the origin, source, cause. Mind is the one divine mind, and man is mind's means of self-expression. Reasoning from the standpoint of the one divine mind, God as the only cause, and man as creation, the only effect, we can exercise our God-given dominion over frustrating human-limiting conditions. Mary Baker Glover had seen through the human mind. From its claim of birth to death, she was lifting the curtain on man as never born and never dying, coexistent with his Creator. The human mind, being enmity to God, cannot entertain divine ideas. The personal sense of mind cannot be enlightened. No such thing can occur. The term human mind, or mortal mind, designates the error or belief in a mind apart from God. Error, therefore, is incapable of receiving enlightenment. Error is capable only of extinction. The human mind cannot receive infinite ideas from the infinite divine mind. The divine idea of the infinite mind is the functioning presence of this mind itself. If there is a point of contact between the human mind and the divine mind, it would be the point of extinction or expulsion. We cannot arrive at the infallibility of the scientific statement of being if we believe the human mind is becoming better enlightened, etc. What appears as the enlightenment of this mortal mind is the dispelling of the belief that being is human, and the scientific statement of being is becoming one's own identification. Mrs. Glover was not trying to enlighten students. She was endeavoring to show them that their present mind is divine. Of course, she was not as yet entirely free of former teachings, but she did see that the human mind was not a factor in Christian Science. It had been the divine mind present and dispelling the suggestion of a limited, finite, personal mind. As this occurred, the light began to break. After 9 years, the book was finished in that little attic room. There was no light in this room but the sun, no air but through the skylight in the roof. No one but Mrs. Glover entered that room until the book was finished. She had to forsake forever the world belief in a personal mind. Here was the gulf appearing, which would wipe out forever the mental science which was trying to counterfeit the divine appearing. Do you ever feel utterly cast down, forsaken, misunderstood? Then visit this little room. Sit quietly in the old-fashioned haircloth rocker, and be very still and hear the pen of Mrs. Glover recording the revelation. See the pages of this precious book fall to the floor, and then read in Tomlinson's book, "It was divine mind expressing itself. I never could have written such a book." In Julia Johnston's book, Mary Baker Eddy, Her Mission and Triumph, we find, "During these momentous days, Mrs. Glover was also teaching classes, imparting to seekers rare gleanings from the Bible. She was looking out from celestial heights, not up to them. It was difficult to persuade her pupils that their outlook could be from the same standpoint. She strove to inspire them to understand her words and to love and live what she taught. It was in this little attic room that Mrs. Glover says for 3 years she sought the science of mind healing. She searched the scriptures and read little else, kept aloof from society, and devoted time and energies to discovering a positive rule. The search was sweet, calm, and buoyant with hope, not selfish nor depressing." From Science and Health. And is this not our experience also? The search is sweet, calm, and buoyant, never depressing, never selfish. From the standpoint of infinite mind's allness and oneness, was there a little room without comfort? Or was this the way the restricted senses were depicting one of the most glorious experiences to ever come to earth? to our leader, it was not depressing nor limiting. It was glorious, freeing, and with a sense of reality. She was looking out from celestial heights, not up to them. It was here that the child was born, whose name is Wonderful. It was here that the great verities of being were recorded. The three great verities of spirit, omnipotence, omnipresence, omniscience, spirit possessing all power, filling all space, constituting all science, contradict forever the belief that matter can be actual. These eternal verities reveal primeval existence as the radiant reality of God's creation, in which all that He has made is pronounced by His wisdom good. Do we see here that these three verities constitute our very identity or being? Man is the conscious identity or being, these verities eternal and just at hand. It is only through radical reliance that scientific healing power can be realized. And this radical reliance must mean that we are not permitted to have any mind but God. And this God mind is being our mind, yesterday, today, and forever. Of course, this is radical reliance. Radical meaning rooted, grounded. Therefore, we are rooted in the one source. Thou shalt have no mind but me. This me is spirit. I will not give my glory to another. Therefore, we are not another, but the radiance of the eternal noon. Therefore, there should be but one fact before the thought, namely spiritual existence. This right reasoning is the controlling power in every incident. It is the governing factor. The scientific statement of being does not permit us to have any other fact before thought, namely, infinite mind, without any possibility of an opposing mind. To have this factor before consciousness is the fast that the ego has chosen. To afflict the personal sense of ego, to deprive it, to hold it as something seen or felt, is no fast at all. In Isaiah we read, "Is it such a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head as a bulrush, and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Wilt thou call this a fast, and an acceptable day of the Lord? Is not this the fast that I have chosen? To loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, and to let the oppressed go free, and that ye break every yoke? Is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry, and that thou bring the poor that are cast out to the house? When thou seest the naked, that thou cover him, and that thou hide not thyself from thine own flesh. Then shall thy light break forth as morning, and thine health shall spring forth speedily, and thy righteousness shall go before thee. The glory of the Lord shall be thy rearward. Then shalt thou call, and the Lord shall answer. Thou shalt cry, and he shall say, Here I am. If thou take away from the midst of thee the yoke, the putting forth of the finger, and speaking vanity, and if thou draw out thy soul to the hungry, and satisfy the afflicted soul, then shall thy light rise in obscurity, and thy darkness be as the noonday. Then shall thou delight thyself in the Lord, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high place of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father, for the mouth of the Lord hath spoken it." Then along came the student, who seemed to understand what the discovery would mean to the world. His name was Asa Eddy. And the marriage between Mrs. Glover and Mr. Eddy took place. From this union we now have the name Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of this great light, that there is but one universal mind, holding within itself all identity, and man, not a person at all, but man, the functioning presence of this light itself. What revelation! As you know, under the name of Mrs. Glover, there appeared in 1870 a book, The Science of Man. In this, we find the original version of the scientific statement of being. This small book became recapitulation in later editions. It may be helpful to see that the leader wrote this statement of true being before the textbook appeared. So great is this statement that it has revolutionized the world and is upsetting all that is not right. Matter has lost its solidity and is seen to be nothing more than moving particles. Heaven has been moved further back due to the astronauts having invaded space, or what is called up there. Theology is losing its hell and brimstone, and finding heaven and hell as states and stages of consciousness. Medicine is losing its drugging and more delving into what is called the mental nature of things. And so is the leaven which the woman planted, which is leavening the whole. It is upon this statement that the whole of the revelation of Christian Science rests. It is the basis of what is called healing, regeneration, evangelization. It is the nay-nay of the Master and the yea-yea of the Christ. What does this statement of true being really indicate? Let us ponder here and now and feel its majestic power, the grandeur of its outlook, and feel without any limitation mind's infinitude, mind's oneness of infinity, felt universally and specifically, and feel it here and now directly. This scientific statement of being is found in Science and Health. There is no life, truth, intelligence, nor substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth, matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal, matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore man is not material, he is spiritual. Mrs. Eddy also states, man's privilege at this supreme moment is to prove the words of our Master, if a man keep my saying, he shall never see death. To divest thought of false trusts and material evidences, in order that the spiritual facts of being may appear, this is the great attainment by means of which we shall sweep away the false and give place to the true. Thus we may establish in truth the temple or body whose builder and maker is God. Do you see? If there is no truth in matter, then it must be the essence of evil. Is this not the reason we find in unity of good? This abortive ego, this fable of error, is laid bare in Christian Science. Human theories call or miscall this evil a child of God. Bruise the head of this serpent, as the truth and the woman are doing in Christian Science, and it stings your heel. Rears its crest proudly, and goes on saying, am I not myself? Am I not mind and matter, person and thing? We should answer, yes, you are indeed yourself, and need most of all to be rid of yourself, for it is very far from God's likeness. In the walk to Emmaus, Jesus was known to his friends by the words which made their hearts burn within them, and by the breaking of bread. The divine Spirit, which identified Jesus thus centuries ago, has spoken through the inspired word and will speak through it in every age and clime. it is revealed to the receptive heart, and is again seen casting out evil and healing the sick. The Master said plainly that physique was not spirit, and after his resurrection he proved to the physical senses that his body was not changed until he himself ascended, or, in other words, there is no other source of life. Organization, corporeality, is not life, nor does it sustain life, nor maintain life. So the symphony of the scientific statement of being continues like a melodic chord. There is no truth in matter. Matter is seen to be the subjective experience of mortal mind. Matter is a misstatement of mind. Matter is objectified error. Matter is but the suppositional objectification of mortal mind. Today, many students are neglecting this important point. Christian Science does not heal matter. Christian Science is purely metaphysical. Therefore, matter must be reduced to mortal mind, and then it can be handled successfully and scientifically in Christian Science, and our cases can be met more readily and permanently. This abortive evil ego must be dispelled. There is no truth in matter. Then why look to that which is error to tell us the truth concerning identity? It cannot tell the truth, for there is no truth in it. There is no intelligence in matter. Intelligence is the primal quality of mind. Intelligence is present as mind's primal self-expression. Man is the witnessing. Then because there is no intelligence in matter, it cannot even seem to think. What is called thinking is not going on in or of the head, but is present as mortal mind suppositional activity, its consolidation of mortal material mentality. Mrs. Eddy writes of brain, which is but a mortal consolidation of material mentality and its suppositional activity. There is no substance in matter. Substance is spiritual consciousness. Substance is incapable of objectification. There are no objects of sense in substance. Substance is primal consciousness. Consciousness includes within itself all identity. Substance is the knowing of mind itself. What the infinite mind knows is substance. Then we do not die out of matter. We are scientifically delivered from it. Seeing the nothingness of personality, the abortive evil ego, and willingness to take off our shoes because we stand on holy ground, then we are never reluctant to let the old go for the new. We are not afraid of absorption. We find the following in the textbook. Beholding the infinite tasks of truth, we pause, wait on God. Then we push onward, until boundless thought walks enraptured, and conception unconfined is winged to reach the divine glory. Error is false mortal belief. It is illusion, without spiritual identity or foundation, and it has no real existence. The supposition that life, substance, and intelligence are in matter or of it is an error. Matter is neither a thing nor a person, but merely the objective supposition of spirit's opposite. The five material senses testify to truth and error as united in a mind both good and evil. Their false evidence will finally yield to truth, to the recognition of spirit and of the spiritual creation. The time has come for a finite conception of the infinite and of a material body as the seat of mind to give place to a diviner sense of intelligence and its manifestations, to the better understanding that science gives of the supreme being or divine principle and idea. Matter grows larger under the physicist's microscope, but it disappears under the microscope of spirit. Why? Because spirit's allness denies the possibility of matter. Again from the textbook, mind, not matter, is causation. A material body only expresses a material and mortal mind. A mortal man possesses this body, and he makes it harmonious or discordant according to the images of thought impressed upon it. When will it be understood that matter has neither intelligence, life, nor sensation, and that the opposite belief is the prolific source of all suffering? God created all through mind, and made all perfect and eternal. Where, then, is the necessity for recreation or procreation? What is left of matter? Nothing. And that is just what I call it, our leader writes. All that is present is the I am called God, being the I am that is man, and the one I saying, I am that I am. This statement of being has to give up the spectral at every point. The symphony breaks forth into its grand rhapsody. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. In this infinitude of mind, all being is found harmonious and eternal. The great verity of divine science becomes more evident. Without the Word of God was not anything made that was made. All is God saying, I am that I am. There is no lesser ego here to say I. Only the ego that is divine, incorporeal, infinite, and eternal is present saying, I am, and constituting the identity man. After Mrs. Eddy discovered the science of being, it took her years to assimilate this discovery and to be able to write it in a form that could be appreciable to the human concept. My discovery that erring, mortal, misnamed mind produced all the organisms and action of the mortal body set my thoughts to work in new channels, and led up to my demonstration of the proposition that mind is all and matter is naught, as the leading factor in mind science. The discovery waited for her full comprehension and acknowledgement.